Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Barry Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Well, good Wednesday afternoon to each and every one of you, wherever you might be out there in Stand in the Gap country. And, of course, I'm Gary Dahl, along with Sam Rohr and David Kistler, and we are delighted to have you with us today because we have a special guest with us, one that many of you may know of. He's Dr. Charles Dunn. And Dr. Dunn, of course, is Professor Emeritus of Clemson University and Distinguished Professor Emeritus of Regent University. During his tenure at Clemson, Dr. Dunn served as Chairman of the Division of Political Science. While he was at Regent, he served as the department head at the prestigious Robertson School of Government. In addition to that, he has also been involved with the Ronald Reagan, the George Bush, and the Bill Clinton administrations. During that particular time, he served as chair of the J. William Fulbright Scholarship. And so he's been involved. In addition to that, he has written some 21 books. Some of them include these titles: American Exceptionalism, Principles and Perspectives, The American Culture in Peril, The Enduring Reagan, The Future of Religion in American Politics, and, well, just a number of others. And I've been told, in comparison to all of these books, one of the best is a book that he's written entitled The Upstream Christian in a Downstream World. And Dr. Charles Dunn, thank you so very much for being with us today on Stand in the Gap Radio.
I'm glad to be with you on a program that bears one of the best names any Christian program could bear.
Amen. Well, that's good. And, of course, that's our I'm guessing that you're referring to Stand in the Gap.
Yes.
And that's our goal. We want to stand in the gap for the things of the Lord. So thank you for that compliment. That's a pretty good way to begin a program, with a compliment from the guest.
Well, Gary, I'm going to pick up from here and ask Dr. Dunn a few questions. And Dr. Dunn, I want to say thank you so much for being with us today. It's a great honor to have you aboard. I know you're a very, very busy man, but I want to give just a little bit of background before we ask a few questions. I got to know you, I think, beginning in 1983. The church you attended at that time, University Baptist in Clemson, was also a church that I attended, and where my wife, who, of course, was not my wife then, but is now, she was attending there and playing the piano for that fine church. And you are the author of numbers, as Gary has already alluded to, numbers of very scholarly works. But I want to say this, the book that has impacted my life, only a few books have done this, but one of the books that just highly impacted my life was your outstanding work that Gary referenced, The Upstream Christian in a Downstream World. And I want to thank you for that. And we may get into a discussion of that if we have some time a little bit later. But I want to jump right in and just ask you a couple of questions. Having authored 21 books, one of which deals directly with presidential leadership, and having worked under several presidents, I'm curious if you could briefly assess what your opinion is of the leadership, or maybe I should say lack thereof, of our current president, Barack Hussein Obama.
When Barack Obama took office, I had high hopes for him. I thought that here is a man who understands politics. He served in the U.S. Senate. He was a very articulate person, and I thought he could accomplish a lot in bringing the country together. But from that time until now, I've seen him go downhill. He has not lived up to the expectations that I had for him. So it's with sorrow that I say that, given the fact that I held him in high regard going into the office.
Well, let me ask this. I know one of the things that has marked this president's time in office has been what some consider to be an unprecedented number of executive orders, not so much in the number specifically of orders, executive actions that he's taken, but the nature of the actions on major, major issues. I'd love for you, because I know you're an expert in this arena, to just discuss briefly your feelings, your belief on President Obama's use of executive order. Are they violations of the Constitution? And if so, how have they violated the Constitution?
Well, first we must back up and note that all presidents have issued executive orders. But more recently, under President Obama, we see him issuing, in large numbers, presidential memoranda. Previous presidents, while many did issue presidential memoranda, they did not issue very many of them. An executive order is a form of law that must be recorded in the Federal Register. An executive order and a presidential memorandum are pretty much one and the same, except a memorandum does not have the same prestige and status. However, it can accomplish much the same thing, and that's what President Obama has done. He's issued so many presidential memoranda, now totaling around about 200, that many people, especially conservatives, question their legality. But we know that executive orders are constitutional. All presidents have issued them. We know that memoranda are constitutional. But the question then is, have they gone beyond the pale, at least of ethical standing, if not indeed constitutional and legal standing? So a legitimate question can be raised there, particularly when it's something like immigration or most recently, telling the national government and the military that you cannot sell or provide to local governments and states military equipment of a certain order. Should that not be something that it's going to be a change in law that the Congress should act on? So I think this most recent one probably illustrates better than any of them, other than the immigration order, the problem that we have seen with his exercise of what is otherwise a constitutional and legal power.
You know, you talk about how that these executive orders are constitutional, and so are the presidential memoranda. But two questions, really, and I don't know that you'll get time to answer both of them before we get into the break. But specifically, Dr. Dunn, what are the constitutional limits of the presidential executive orders? And secondly, if one is given that is outlandish, what can be done to bring it back into line?
Well, the Congress has certain powers, but insofar as negating an executive order or presidential memorandum, the best power that it has is not necessarily something stated in the Constitution. That is the power of investigation, because the Congress passes laws, the president has the constitutional power to implement those laws. So on that point, Congress can investigate if the president has performed properly.
Okay, well, that's a very good answer, and we'll continue with that in just a moment when we come back after this break. Thank you for joining us today, ladies and gentlemen, on Stand in the Gap Today. We will be back with more right after this.
Deer might be fun to look at, but they can rub the bark off your trees overnight, creating thousands of dollars in damage. Ordinary tree wraps or stormwater pipe can't stand up to deer when they're rutting or in heat. Hi, I'm Jim Saunders, the creator of Tree Armor, the world's first and only spring-loaded tree guard. Tree Armor stands up to any buck, protecting young trees up to 4 inches thick from deer rubbing, as well as power tools. It's infused with a natural cayenne pepper scent that repels deer before they can do damage to your trees. It's brown and almost invisible from a short distance, and Tree Armor is the only tree guard made in America, using only EPA-approved vinyl, free of lead and heavy metals found in other imported products. Tree Armor is not available in stores, but you can buy it from the manufacturer at a huge discount. Go to our website, my mytreearmor.com and buy as many as you need from about $3 each. We even pay the postage. That's mytreearmor.com to protect your trees.
Hey, Grandma, can you help me with this new Common Core assignment? I'm supposed to read all about global warming and how we're polluting the air just by breathing. I held my breath 10 times today because I don't want to hurt those poor polar bears.
Oh, honey, don't you worry. There are 4 times as many polar bears now than when I was a kid. You can breathe safely because you're not polluting anything. That's just another government scheme cooked up to tax and control people.
But it's right here in my Common Core book, Grandma. I'll get a bad grade if I say that. What shall I do?
Get Common Core out of your state. If you would just make this your project, you could change the country.
Learn more about the federal Common Core and PA Core standards and call your representatives today and ask them to stop the national takeover of education. Go to knowpacommoncore.com or call Richard at 484-678-2236. Pennsylvanians Against Common Core brought you this message.
There's hundreds of fun and simple things you and your family can do to live a healthier lifestyle. Here's 20 of them. Eat less, eat slower, eat smarter, eat your fruits and veggies, stop eating before you're full, up your fiber, lower your calories, get off the bus early, do some gardening, do jumping jacks, take the stairs, take one, not two, take on a new sport, take a long walk home, walk instead of drive, bend, stretch, reach for the stars, climb the monkey bars, skip the fudge bars. Search We Can online to find more ways you and your family can get healthy together. A message from the Ad Council, HHS, and NIH's We Can program.
On the next episode of Recipes for Disaster.
I'm making beef sliders for my friend Sammy. Nana taught me to always pull meat off the grill early, so it's extra juicy.
Use a food thermometer to ensure ground beef is 160 degrees, or you could make people really sick. Sandy didn't think twice about the slider she ate until yoga class, when a nasty case of food poisoning turned her downward-facing dog into upward-moving lunch. Watch Recipes for Disaster at foodsafety.gov and learn the steps Maria unwittingly leaves out. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
On Memorial Day, we honor those who've given their lives in battle so we can live in freedom. But when it comes to memorials, God says there's more to it than just remembering. In Joshua chapter 4, God instituted the concept of memorials and the deeper reason for them. I'm Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network. Upon rolling back the waters of the Jordan River, God instructed the nation of Israel to cross over into the Promised Land, take 12 stones, and place them on the riverbank as a memorial, a visible reminder to the next generation of the greatness of Jehovah God. In the future, when your children see this memorial and they ask why it's there, you must remind them that it's God who opened the waters of the Red Sea, that it's God who gave victory over the enemy, and that it's God alone who preserves, blesses, and defends. I'm Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network, urging you on this Memorial Day, while remembering the sacrifice of earthly heroes, remember even more our awesome and great God, to whom all glory and honor are due.
Sign up as a partner at papastors.net.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. On behalf of Dave Kistler and Sam Rohr, I am Gary Dull, and we have quite an distinguished guest with us today. He's Dr. Charles Dunn, and, of course, among many other things that he's done, he, of course, has served under 3 presidents, Ronald Reagan, George Bush the first, as it were, and then, of course, Bill Clinton. He's an author. He's a professor. He's a man who knows the Lord and loves the Lord and has great wisdom and insight and understanding, not only to the Word of God, but to politics and government and so many things that are going on in our nation today. And so, Sam, I'm going to go to you, if you don't mind, for the next question as we continue our time with Dr. Charles Dunn.
Well, absolutely, Gary and Dave and Dr. Dunn. Back to you. Let's follow up just one quick question, if we can, on the matter of Congress and executive orders. Clearly, anyone who's a conservative, a constitutionalist, Christian, understands that that the overuse or the abuse of executive orders are something that's very, very troubling, and they probably don't even know half of those that have been done. However, the question always comes back, well, why in the world isn't Congress doing something about it? And I'd like to ask you that question. Why is it that these overreaches of executive power, which has been something our founders were concerned about, and in the past was not as not done as often, clearly, as this president is, why isn't this Congress doing what they can do to put manners on an overreaching executive branch?
Everything rises and falls on leadership. Republicans and conservatives of the Congress have not had the leadership to take these matters under advisement in congressional investigations. The committee process has not been exercised fully as it could and should be. We have the Gowdy Committee that, of course, is undertaking a major investigation now, but a lot of time is required in order to do that. So there has to be leadership ability and willpower, and there also has to be the time to get a committee investigation moving. And there are a lot of problems along, pitfalls along the way to keep the investigation from going. So I have to fault leadership, and I also have to say there's a problem of time in undertaking an appropriate investigation. So if the Republicans and conservatives can begin to exercise more leadership and plant the seeds necessary to get the public to support an investigation, those are the things required.
Okay, one quick question, if I could follow up just a bit further on that. If my experience has been in government, that part of that, I think, goes exactly what you're talking about. It's failed leadership, because it does require a stick-to-itiveness. It does require a real fixation on the rule of law and what that means in keeping these balances of power separate and so forth. But on the other hand, I and a lot of folks are just plain lazy. So I think you are speaking something that I think I have witnessed myself. But I want to go one step further here. I have seen this happen on state level, and I believe that it is happening on a national level. And the comment is this: this president and this administration has in fact acknowledged the fact that they had been surveilling and monitoring cell phone messages and those kinds of things of the members, even within the Congress. That was a public admission. Of course, when there's monitoring, they're hearing a lot of things that are going on. Is there, and could there be, an effort also by a unruly administration, could be this one, could be other ones, that would actually use information that could be compromising to intimidate the leadership into not doing what they ought to do? Is that going on?
I don't know that it's going on. It is a possibility. I remember when I served on Capitol Hill for 4 years, I knew a prominent United States senator who would not conduct an interview in his office for fear that something like that would take place. He would only go out in the hall to conduct an interview. So he feared way back then that kind of a problem. So I don't want to allege that it's happening, but I could say, yes, the possibility exists.
And that's probably sufficient, Dr. Dunn, at the moment, because I will go as far as say that when I was in the House, I knew it was happening. Senator members, we actually proved it out, and one individual actually lost his position because of it. So it can happen. And I'm just saying, for the sake of the listeners that are there, we wonder why. There's a lot of things behind the scene, but your point there, failed leadership at the end of the day, probably is there. Dave or Gary?
If I could just add something here. If every one of our listeners would, in their mind, draw a pyramid, what I'm going to describe is the pyramid of laws. At our nation's founding, at the base of the pyramid of the laws was divine and natural law. We had in the 1892-93 case of the United States versus Holy Trinity that the majority, the unanimous majority of U.S. Supreme Court ruled that we are a Christian nation and always have been. Well, 100 years later, a candidate for the Supreme Court had to say that he would not consider divine and natural law in rendering rulings on the U.S. Supreme Court, that being Justice Thomas. So that's been that was the foundation, the basis of our law. Then you have constitutional law above that. Constitutional law is to be in sync with divine and natural law. And above that, you have statutory law, the law implemented, of course, by Congress, to be in sync with constitutional law. And then you have executive law, administrative law at the peak of the pyramid. There is to be in sequence, or as the ruling of a president regarding executive orders, that's to be in sync with each of the other forms of law. Well, we have everything out of sync now, and that's why questions like this are being raised. There is no longer the respect for the order of law that we once had.
You know, Sam, it's interesting that Dr. Dunn brought that up. And, Doc, I want to thank you so much for laying that out so clearly. Sam, I know you're doing probably cartwheels there in your studio, because we just had a conversation about this very, very recently. And it could not have been more clearly explained than Dr. Dunn just did it. I want to shift gears, gentlemen, because we have just limited time left in this segment. Dr. Dunn, I want to ask you this, and we're going to move into just a brief discussion about the 2016 elections. We're about a year and a half away from the 2016 general elections, and it appears as if the GOP is going to have at least 12 potential contenders for the Republican nomination, maybe as many as 20 may ultimately emerge. Been a lot of discussion. In fact, I just heard someone within the last week say, why can't the Republican Party stop the infighting, stop running this, you know, this litany of candidates, decide on one candidate, and get that candidate, you know, nominated, and then prepare for the general elections rather than the bloodbath that many people are supposing that will be the nomination process. My question to you is this. With this many candidates out there running or vying for the GOP nomination, is that a bad thing in your estimation, or is that a good thing and just democracy at work?
In the end, it could be a good thing, but right now, I'm, of course, pessimistic about whether it will be good, because we have all these candidates representing different factions in the Republican Party. There seems to be no unity. But how it could become good is like this. You remember Will Rogers, who said, I'm not a member of an organized political party. I'm a Democrat. And at that time, the Democratic Party appeared like the Republican Party today. If you're a Republican today, you could say, hey, I'm not a member of an organized political party. I'm a Republican. Well, there is a benefit in having a lot of candidates appealing to different segments of the electorate. So in the short term, we may be pessimistic about the potential. In the long term, that could turn out to be a plus for us, as it used to turn out to be a plus for the Democrats, who, of course, now they're very much an organized political party. They only have one candidate.
Yeah, I don't think that she has too much to stand upon, Dr. Dunn. We talk about that on this program. I cannot envision her even being the Democratic nominee, let alone the president of the United States. Boy, I just can't envision it. But yeah, you never know what God's going to do. Quickly, of the potential nominees that we have in the Republican, in the GOP, who do you see as the greatest presidential material?
There are several really good candidates, and that's one of the benefits of having what's called a strong bench in baseball. Republicans have a strong bench, and regardless of whether you or I or anyone listening audience likes any one of these I'm going to mention, you have to admit that they have a lot of capability. Let's just take Jeb Bush, for example, because he's much talked about. He had a very successful tenure as governor of Florida. He's an able person. Has a number of minuses, too. I'll not go into those. Rubio, this fella is quite articulate, and he's willing to take on difficult issues.
I'm going to have to jump in here, Dr. Dunn. I'm going to have to jump in here. We are up against the hard break. Could you stay on until the next segment to answer your question and a few others that we have for you?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned. Dr. Dunn will remain with us. We will be back with more right after this. Please do not go away. Thank you for the pleasure of your company.
Kings or Parliament could not give the rights essential to happiness. We claim them from a higher source, from the King of Kings and Lord of all the earth. They are not annexed to us by parchments and seals. They are created in us by the decrees of Providence, which established the law of our nature. They are born with us, exist with us, and cannot be taken from us by any human power without taking our lives. A quote from John Dickinson, 1804.
News Radio. I'm Chris Foster. President Obama tells Coast Guard Academy graduates in Connecticut that climate change is a military and national security issue.
Droughts will exacerbate shortages of water and food, increase competition for resources, and create the potential for mass migrations and new tensions.
And he says more natural disasters means more refugee situations. Four banks will plead guilty to manipulating international currency rates. Attorney General Loretta Lynch.
Now, the prices the market sets for those currencies influence virtually every sector of every economy in the world. Their actions inflated the bank's profits while harming countless consumers, investors, and institutions around the globe.
The banks are J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, Barclays, and the Royal Bank of Scotland. UBS pleads guilty to manipulating interest rates. Altogether, it's $5.7 billion in fines and fees.
History was made on today's date. Stay tuned for an American Minute with Bill Federer.
This day, May 20th, 1927, at 7:52 a.m., one of the greatest feats in aviation began as Charles Lindbergh departed Roosevelt Field in New York in his silver monoplane named the Spirit of St. Louis. 33 and a half hours later, he landed in France, completing the first solo flight across the Atlantic. At 25 years old, he was decorated by the President of France, the King of England, and President Calvin Coolidge. At the Institute of Aeronautical Sciences, Lindbergh stated, "It was not the outer grandeur of the Roman, but the inner simplicity of the Christian that lived through the ages."
This has been an American Minute with Bill Federer. For a free transcript, call American Minute at 1-888-USA-WORD.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. And, of course, today we are delighted to have with us Dr. Charles Dunn, a professor, one who served in three presidential administrations, that is the Reagan, the Bush, and the Carter, the Clinton administration, an author who's written 21 books, a good Christian, and one who has a lot of insight. And Dr. Dunn, before we went into the break, you were talking about the presidential qualities that the individuals have, particularly in the GOP camp. And I'm wondering if you would continue your thought on that. And then once you're finished with that, I have a question I want to ask you that we heard on Fox News. Now, not all of our stations carry the Fox News break at 12:30, but our flagship station in Philadelphia does. And there was something there that struck my attention that I want to ask you about. But please, if you would, go ahead and finish your thought on who you see as some of the as having great presidential potential in the GOP.
Let's look at two or three variables here in making this analysis. One is governors. They have executive leadership and background. That could be a plus, whether it's with, you know, Jeb Bush or Scott Walker or Kasich, if he gets into it, gubernatorial executive leadership background. That's something lacking in the current president. He did not have executive leadership experience going into the White House. Another factor that we have to consider is foreign policy. And on that, of course, we would turn to those out of the U.S. Senate who've had a greater interest, intense interest, over a longer period of time in foreign policy matters. We'd have to give the nod there to people like Rubio. So there are these variables, but one more, and that is social conservatives, be they economic, religious, or otherwise. Social conservatives, we'll refer to them generally. That is a very important element in the early primaries, going into Iowa, where evangelicals, for example, constitute about a majority of the vote in among Republicans in Iowa, following on through to South Carolina, the strong evangelical influence there. So social conservatives can play a major role, and that's why we're seeing most of the candidates try to develop a following among social and religious conservatives and also economic conservatives. Those are three key variables to watch. And we see strengths among each one of the candidates. Even, for example, Lindsey Graham out of South Carolina is not known as an evangelical, but he knows the importance of that vote, and he's trying to curry favor with it. Rand Paul, also a strong libertarian, is trying to curry favor with some evangelicals. So I would say to our listening audience, look for those three variables, executive leadership versus senatorial foreign affairs leadership, and then the power, the influence of the social conservative vote.
Well, now, and I appreciate that explanation. So do you think that good social conservative team made up of a governor and a senator would be a good president, vice presidential ticket?
That could well be. And, of course, geographic balance can also be an important consideration. Mm-hmm. So if, for example, you were to have, just pulling this out of the air, Rubio of Florida, U.S. Senate, foreign affairs background, Latino influence there, and combine that with, say, Scott Walker, Wisconsin. And, of course, Wisconsin geographically is important as well as politically because he has beaten Democrats and big labor there in several races. And the Republican Party began in Ripon, Wisconsin. So that would be a plus, a geographic plus and an institutional plus of the Senate and a gubernatorial executive background. We can think of these mix and matches along the way. And almost every one of the candidates fits in positively with one or the other of those matches.
You know, I'm going to ask a question, and then we'll go to Sam Rohr. But as I said, not all of our stations pick up the Fox News during the 12:30 break, but our flagship station does. And as the president was speaking down in Annapolis at the graduation at the Naval Academy, he indicated that climate change is really a military issue. Why does this president make such statements that seemingly have no relevancy? I mean, that's sort of a general question, but I don't see how climate change is necessarily a military issue. Do you, Dr. Dunn? Or is it? Maybe I'm missing something.
Well, the president is trying to write his legacy in the last 2 years of his two terms in office. He recognizes that as it is right now, his legacy does not have a lot going for it. And climate change is one of those things that he has talked about since before he took office. And he's not been able to accomplish much, and many people, of course, disagree with him about it. So he's undertaking every effort possible to raise the horizon, the specter of that issue. Well, delivering a commencement address at a military academy of great stature is another way that he can do that. So we have to look at it through his mind and through his desire for his legacy. You know, a lot of the money that funded Barack Obama in winning back in 2008 came from the people who argue on the matter of climate change. So this is, from his standpoint, that's a payoff to those people who helped put him in office. So that's why we're seeing these things. Whether we agree with them or not, we can understand where he's coming from.
Dr. Dunn, I'm going to switch topic. I appreciate the answer on that, and even though what you're saying is correct, I mean, that even that right there is undergirding a problem that people see. And that's a bribery type of a thing where we're going to repay people for whatever, and again, gets us into the area of bad policy. But talking about policy, big issue, rise of Islam, ISIS. We got the fall of, over in what's happening in Iraq now. We have threats here on our own shore. Even the FBI, I just saw right now, just went into a high school location in New Jersey yesterday and are trying to tell the high school students now about, how to be alert for Islamic recruiting within the high schools there. So there's a lot of things going on. My question to you is this. You've served under three presidents. We now have one. This issue's come to the forefront. Put yourself in this perspective. If Ronald Reagan was president today and this issue of ISIS was coming forth, how would he deal with it?
Well, he would not deal with it the way it's being dealt with now. He would deal with it forthrightly. Remember some of the actions that he took. Let's think about with regard to the air traffic controllers. He acted immediately and forthrightly. He would do the same thing on this. And here is where I would have to commend one of the Republican aspirants, Marco Rubio. The language that he used was very Reagan-esque. We're going to come after you. We're going to get you. We have no language like that from President Obama. And until we have language like that, the enemy is going to press itself all over the world and in our country. We have to have a president who will stand up as Ronald Reagan stood up. And that, of course, comes out of my book, The Enduring Reagan.
Dr. Dunn, we've got just a few minutes left in this segment, and I want to ask you one question. It was interesting that you transitioned by referencing your book, because that's really a question I want to ask. Having worked with Ronald Reagan and in the Reagan administration, can you speak to maybe just the one thing in your mind that stands out about Ronald Reagan that made him the great leader that he was?
Yes. He never forgot where he came from. Where did he come from? He came from the little town of Dixon, Illinois, raised by a godly mother. She was a Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night Christian. Ronald Reagan learned to speak in that little church in Dixon, Illinois, where they had speaking contests. You know, this is hardly mentioned in anything written about him. But he went on, for example, then to Eureka College, just a short distance from where he grew up in Dixon, and he would go back to teach his boys' Sunday school class. He'd travel back on Sunday to teach his boys' Sunday school class. Years later, he was in California, governor of California, and he sat down and penned a personal letter to the pastor of that church. Notice this is many years later, and he thanked that pastor and that church for the influence that it had on him. Ronald Reagan never forgot where he came from.
Dr. Dunn, we want to thank you so much for being with us today. This has been an insightful interview. and your experience, your knowledge of the presidency of Reagan, of all of these issues relative to the things we talked about and a lot of things we didn't, has just been amazing. So thank you so much for being aboard, and we definitely want to have you back on whenever you're available to come back and join us for another program.
Thank you. I'll be glad to come back on.
Thank you so much.
And ladies and gentlemen, we will be back with more Stand in the Gap today, right after this. Don't go away.
Deer might be fun to look at, but they can rub the bark off your trees overnight, creating thousands of dollars in damage. Ordinary tree wraps or stormwater pipe can't stand up to deer when they're rutting or in heat. Hi, I'm Jim Saunders, the creator of Tree Armor, the world's first and only spring-loaded tree guard. Tree Armor stands up to any buck, protecting young trees up to 4 inches thick from deer rubbing as well as power tools. It's infused with a natural cayenne pepper scent that repels deer before they can do damage to your trees. It's brown and almost invisible from a short distance, and Tree Armor is the only tree guard made in America using only EPA-approved vinyl, free of lead and heavy metals found in other imported products. Tree Armor is not available in stores, but you can buy it from the manufacturer at a huge discount. Go to our website, mytreearmor.com, and buy as many as you need from about $3 each. We even pay the postage. That's mytreearmor.com to protect your trees.
From the Pennsylvania Family Institute, I'm Michael Gear with today's Family Update. I've got some good news in the fight for religious freedom and the sanctity of life here in Pennsylvania, and that's the addition of another highly qualified advocate joining the cause. His name is Jeremy Samick, and this month he joined our Independence Law Center legal team to serve alongside our chief counsel, Randall Wenger. This legal team now brings additional expertise and passion to the battle as they provide policy expertise and pro bono legal help to advance the cause of life and liberty. It is your generous financial support that helps us stand up for truth and justice, and your support today would be most welcomed. And if you think of it, send along a note welcoming Jeremy to the team. You can contribute tax-deductible donations to Pennsylvania Family Institute, 23 North Front Street, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, 17101, or donate online securely at pafamily.org.
Have you checked out our podcasts on our WFYL homepage? Did you know you could stream us anytime, night or day, 24/7 at 1180WFYL.com? If you like what you hear on WFYL, please email us at info@1180WFYL.com to let us know.
Did you just look down at your phone? You did it again, didn't you? You know, you're flying down the road in a 3-ton hunk of steel, and a text takes your eyes off the road for an average of 5 seconds. That's long enough to travel the length of a football field and cause some serious damage. Turn it off. Trust me. Whatever it is, you'll live.
Learn more at StopTextStopWrecks.org.
Here's Dan Celia with today's Stewardship Moment.
I often tell people, particularly men, it seems so much easier to draw closer to God in our adversity or our time of weakness. We are certainly more dependent on God, but a different story when prosperity strikes. Prosperity can oftentimes persuade us to think that we no longer need God, or we don't require the same things from Him when our life is going well. That's exactly what the enemy would want us to believe. Listen, if we are going to walk close to God, we need to be consistent under all circumstances.
You've just heard a Stewardship Moment with Dan Celia of Financial Issues Ministry, helping you plan, give, and invest wisely. For more information, log on to financialissues.org. That's financialissues.org.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. And of course, we just had a great discussion with Dr. Charles Dunn. And Dave, you want to make a quick follow-up there with something that he just said.
Well, Gary, number one, it was great to have him aboard. He's a tremendous gentleman. I can't wait for you guys to meet him personally, face-to-face. But the thing I wanted to make a point about is what he said about Reagan's upbringing and the fact that Reagan never got away from that. When you visit the Reagan Library in Simi Valley, California, one of the first things they do is take you into a hallway where there is a Bible under a plexiglass cover. And they make a great point to explain to you that that Bible was the personal Bible that was owned and used by Ronald Reagan's mom, Nell Reagan. It was also the Bible on which he placed his hand twice as he was governor of California and sworn into office, and then twice as he was sworn into office as president of the United States. And they make the very point there that Dr. Dunn made, and that is this. It was from that Bible, it was from that church, it was from those Sunday school classes that Reagan gained his love of language. He was known as the great communicator, and indeed he was, but he gained his love of words and language and all of those things in that church. And what to me, gentlemen, is interesting is the place they chose, or they have chosen there at the Reagan Library, to place the marker, the little yellow or red ribbon that comes down the middle of a Bible as it is opened underneath that plexiglass. The place they've chosen to leave it open, and you can see it very, very clearly, is 2 Chronicles 7, verses 14 and following. By the way, that is the place Reagan wanted his Bible opened when he was sworn into office in 1980 for his first term as president of the United States. So everything Dr. Dunn just shared about Reagan and him remembering his upbringing and the God of his upbringing is absolutely powerful and palatable to the time in which we're living. So interesting things and a great conversation today with Dr. Dunn.
Well, indeed. And of course, I think that the further we get away from the Reagan administration, the more even the progressives and the liberals will appreciate him, at least his character. They may not agree with him politically, but I think that they will agree with his character and recognizing that he was a man of, upright character, to be frank about it. But Sam, you know, Ronald Reagan is referred to, many times by presidential candidates. And, you know, not only have the GOP candidates over the years referred to him, but I've even heard some Democratic candidates refer to him as well whenever they could take advantage of his name. but we need another man like Ronald Reagan. Now, that's my opinion. And we need a man of leadership. We need a man who can make a quick decision when he needs to make it, a wise decision when he needs to make it. Sam, as you look at this present bank of candidates on the GOP, and I know we asked this to Dr. Dunn, but I want to get your opinion because of the fact that you've been in government for many, many years and you're associated with it. Do you see any one of these candidates who in any way, shape, or form would even be close to Ronald Reagan as we knew him 30 years ago when he was in the White House?
Gary, you know, to some extent, yes. I think what Dr. Dunn did by laying out these three areas, these are key areas of evaluation: executive leadership experience, foreign policy knowledge, and where they are in the ability to identify and articulate and relate to those who are fiscal and social conservatives, because that's when the pack is thinned out in the primary. I think those were very good. Now, if you look to those who have that depth of experience, you know, at the end of the day, foreign policy knowledge comes and goes depending, and you could say, well, you know, Marco Rubio has foreign policy knowledge because he's on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Well, I mean, if frankly, if that's all their knowledge of foreign policy is, that's not really enough either, in my opinion. But that's better than perhaps some others. But, you know, a Ronald Reagan went into it. He was never on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He didn't even serve in Congress. Well, what did he know about foreign relations? Well, he knew, and this would be the key here for these individuals. Do they know biblical principles? Can they articulate? Do they hold convictions? And can they express them to the average man, to the average person? And can they do it with a little bit of humor, too? I mean, you put all those things together, that's what a Ronald Reagan was. He was a package that was unusual. I don't see any of the candidates having perhaps the wit and the charm and the humor as effectively used as a Reagan used it. But do I see some with a depth of conviction? I do. I mean, he didn't, Dr. Dunn didn't reference, for instance, Senator Cruz at all. But I do think that he possesses the moral convictions and the breadth of knowledge, and he speaks without notes. That's a good thing, I think, in my opinion, because it tends to be born out of your heart. But then it kind of varies from there. So I don't want to use up too much more time here, Gary, but I believe that what we are witnessing now in this time is a development of these individual candidates. I think some of these things are going to come to bear over time. Because remember, Ronald Reagan did not make the scene of America his first pass. He was governor. He had a radio program across this country, which millions of people listened to. He honed his skills. He honed his positions. And he connected the current policy with his principles. And he was able to develop in that fashion. These others, I believe, are in that process of doing that. So I think the next few months are going to help bring some of that answer, some of your question there, Gary, to bear.
Gary, can I jump in and just say this? What Sam just referenced, I think, is it needs to be underscored. Reagan had no foreign policy experience from the standpoint of sitting on any of these committees or any of those kind of things. But what he did know, and it goes back to what Dr. Dunn shared about his upbringing, what he did know is he did know human nature. The reason he could sit across a table from Mikhail Gorbachev and hold his own and more and not give away the store at Reykjavik, the reason he could have the convictions that he had and stand where he stood with people on the Democratic Party and get them to come to his side was that he understood human nature. And where did he get that thorough understanding of human nature? He got it from the scriptures that were taught to him as a young man. So from that standpoint, he was a phenomenal person. What we don't see in the current occupant of the White House, our current president, what we don't see in so many of these people that that may want to run for high office, they don't have an understanding of human nature from a scriptural standpoint that Ronald Reagan clearly did. And so that's what carried him through so successfully, as well as the other things Sam mentioned, his wit, his humor, and all the other things as well. But he understood human nature from a biblical perspective.
Well, he did. And, you know, I fully believe that God raised up Ronald Reagan for the time. I mean, we went through that mess with Jimmy Carter. And Ronald Reagan, I think, was an answer to prayer. And so, therefore, I think that now we need to pray that God will raise up someone who can be Reagan-esque, as it were. And just thinking about this, you know, we have a radio program. Some of us have executive leadership. Some of us have knowledge of foreign policy. And some of us, we're all conservatives. So between the three of us, men, maybe we ought to run for the presidency the next time around.
Between the three of us, Gary, we have one brain.
I hope.
That's up for debate, too.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for being with us. We will be back tomorrow, the Lord willing. Until then, stand in the gap for faith and freedom. Keep looking up, for the best is yet to come.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler. Brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.AmericanPastorsNetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission. Join us again tomorrow for Stand in the Gap Today.
A wise and frugal government, which shall restrain men from injuring one another, shall leave them otherwise free to regulate their own pursuits of industry and improvement, and shall not take from the mouth of labor the bread it has earned. This is the sum of good government, taken from Thomas Jefferson's first inaugural address, March 4th, 1801.